Well, hello, friends. Mark DiMatteo here with a new audio message going out to our Great Questions group. And, of course, I trust that this finds each of you doing well. And, folks, this is actually message number 18, and it is titled The Atomic Paradox, Part 1. The Atomic Paradox, Part 1. And just as a quick reminder, if you are new to our broadcasts, I'd like to say welcome. We are continuing to grow as I continue to find more and more people that are interested in the same things that you and I are. And actually, we're now closing in on 540 folks that are a part of my personal email list, with more folks actually now joining the blog or the website, my personal website. And, of course, I know the messages are being shared with many more as well, so that's awesome. The more, the merrier. And if you do want to have or find or look up some more information on what we're doing and find my previously recorded messages, you are welcome to visit us at markdematteo.com, markdematteo. Okay? So, let's get rolling with our message for today. And folks, in this message, I want to share with you some of the things I learned as I began to take a simple look at the fundamental building block of the cosmos, which is, of course, the atom. Ever since I became aware of them, I think I have been fascinated by the reality of their existence. It is amazing to stop for a few moments and just begin to consider these astounding little entities, that all of the matter in the entire cosmos, from you and I out to the most distant galaxies, is all made of. And as a quick aside, if anyone might be wondering about the postulated, quote, dark matter, unquote, we hear discussed from time to time, I would refer you to my most recent blog post where I share some thoughts on this very topic. But for now, let me just say that while I realized that there has been a lot of conjecture about its possible existence, definitive science has not yet proved that dark matter even exists, let alone what it is or what it might be made of. On the other hand, hard science has proved that there are indeed atoms. And while there is still much we don't understand, that is why it's called actually atomic theory and not atomic law, yet there is still a great deal that we do know. So, since I wanted to continue to keep my studies focused within the realm of definitive science and also maintain my theme of simplicity, I figured a quick look at the basic building block we know exists would be a logical thing to do. And just as a reminder, before we continue, we talked a little bit about science and the scientific method in regard to what it is and what it is not in message number 9, okay? So if anybody wants a little refresher on that. So, let's take just a quick and basic look at the amazing atom. And as we do, I think perhaps you will be as astounded as I was. For as I began to explore them, a realm of vast extremes opened up before me that, quite frankly, I still find difficult to completely comprehend. I think you'll see what I mean by that as we go through this. That is why I have entitled these next messages The Atomic Paradox. For as we travel into their domain, they almost seem to be contradictions to reality. In other words, entities that shouldn't even exist in the cosmos that empirical science has revealed to us. I'll elaborate on these comments later, but for now, let's begin our little odyssey into the fascinating world of the atom. As I actually mentioned in the previous message, our tri-universe, atoms primarily consist of three basic parts: protons, neutrons, and electrons. While there is now indication that these three individual particles may even be made up of even smaller things called quarks, which is truly remarkable, we are not going to concern ourselves with them in this discussion. The things I learned just from gaining a better understanding of the atom itself and its three, quote, basic parts was astounding enough. In fact, simply by arranging in a specific number these three components in any given atom, we can get all of the chemical elements currently known to science. Protons and neutrons are extremely heavy for their size and make up the center or nucleus of an atom. And I think everybody out there probably understands what the basic structure of an atom looks like. It's kind of like a little mini solar system with the nucleus in the center and the electrons spinning around the outside, which is what I'm going to mention right now. Electrons, conversely though, are extremely light. In fact, they seem to weigh virtually nothing at all. And as I just mentioned, they spin or orbit around the nucleus where the protons and neutrons are, as I also just mentioned. They move so fast that they are said to swarm and actually create what is called an electron shell, or sometimes what is called an electron cloud, or what might even also be called a shroud. Furthermore, they seem to have the unusual ability to act interchangeably as both wave energy and also particles. This is unusual. Though science has no apparent explanation for why this is so, I found it fascinating that electrons also, as does light itself, seem to possess this apparent dual nature. While it is fairly well understood that they are extremely small, I think most everybody knows that, most of us probably have no idea just how small. I know I didn't. In actuality, their incredibly tiny size is almost impossible to grasp. In fact, there are more atoms contained in one cube of sugar than there are stars in all the entire known universe. Or we could say that the quantity of atoms in that one sugar cube exceeds the total number, get this folks, of grains of sand on all the beaches of all the world. Folks, that is extraordinary. Furthermore, another fascinating fact I learned that is not so commonly well known is that an atom is, in actuality, composed primarily of empty space. I used to envision their structure as being rather compact, with the electrons orbiting in fairly close proximity to the nucleus. Boy, was I surprised when I learned how different the reality is. In fact, there is actually several million times more empty space in an atom than there is stuff in an atom. To help visualize this, let's imagine being able to blow up an atom in size so that now its nucleus would be the size of a ping pong ball. Are you with me? Okay, now imagine taking that ping pong ball and walking out into the center of any one of the large domed sports stadiums that exist today. Envision standing out at midfield in the center, holding that ping pong ball in your hand. To scale, if that little ball was the actual nucleus of an atom, the closest electrons would be like tiny grains of sand, and they would be orbiting, now get this, at the outside perimeter of the stadium. Did you catch that? In proportion, a stadium-sized atom would have a ping pong ball sized nucleus and sand grain sized electrons. Folks, that blew me away. I had no idea it was like that. Consequently, therefore, carrying on from this, since atoms are primarily empty space, it therefore stands to reason that so is everything else that is made of them. It kind of gives us a new meaning to the term airhead, doesn't it? Hope no one's ever been called that, but anyway, empty space. But if that is so, why can't I put my hand right through the desk I'm sitting at? It's because those electrons, as I've referred to already, are spinning so quickly that they actually create a barrier and consequently a structure to each of the atoms. In reality, this is an absolutely amazing phenomena that science only vaguely understands. The speed at which the electrons orbit and the extreme dimensions within which they do so are almost impossible to even begin to understand. In fact, these rates are so vast that they may actually approach the speed of light, which you science buffs out there know is a little over 186,000 miles per second. This is truly remarkable. And it is why scientists often use words that try to describe how the electron seems to be everywhere at the same time. In fact, the atomic speeds are so large and the dimensions so small that physicists have established what they call the principle of indeterminacy due to the degree of uncertainty that still exists in this field of study. Because, folks, the space is so small and the speeds are so great. Therefore, though the reality is my hand is composed primarily of empty space, and so is my desk, that, quote, motion barrier, if you will, prevents my hand from passing through my desk in sort of the same way the rapidly spinning spokes of a bicycle wheel prevent us from putting our fingers through it, hopefully. Furthermore, this, folks, this motion is continuous. Not only do the electrons swarm nonstop at these breakneck speeds around the nucleus, but the nucleus itself spins in constant motion. What's more, we can't seem to stop this motion while the atom is intact. For if we could, matter in essence would cease to exist. We can speed up the motion by adding energy to the atom, in other words, heating it up, but we cannot remove enough energy, or in other words, cooling it down, to make the atomic motion come to a halt. This is why science has defined a lower thermal barrier called absolute zero. While there appears to be no limit as to how hot things can get, there is a definite limit as to how cold they can, and it is, ready for this, -469.67 degrees Fahrenheit, okay, which is pretty cold. Science presently has no explanation as to why this is so, only that there is definitely some factor preventing atomic motion from stopping, which would thereby cause the spontaneous annihilation of matter. Personally, I found this fascinating. Why should there be such a barrier? Furthermore, and as I conclude this message, it soon became quite obvious to me that atoms are not random little blobs in space. Rather, despite their extremely minute size, they yet contain an amazing amount of structure and order. While there is still much about them we don't understand, atoms are yet composed of the same basic parts, are organized the same basic way, and operate in the same consistent manner, all of which seems to be according to some fairly well-defined principles. And this is especially significant in light of how dynamic they indeed are. For as we just discussed, they are most certainly not static structures, but operate and exist based on a rate of continuous motion that would seem to be unmatched by any other component of the cosmos. Now, in our next message, we are going to continue our discussion of atoms and are going to look at them in relation to energy and power. I am going to try to give you some idea of the extraordinary magnitude of the power that is not only operating within them, but that by implication must therefore also be present in the entire structure of our cosmos. Folks, I think it will blow you away, as it certainly has me. So, until then, I'm sending my best out to each of you, and am pleased we are traveling this journey together. Y'all have a great day, folks. Bye-bye.